Palestine Christmas is canceled because there's a genocide and there's no end in sight. Almost 80 days now, Israel has been bombing every single part of Gaza. Keep publishing videos of themselves committing war crimes. We told you they did it. They lied about it. Then it came out that it was true that they did it. The time it came out, it was already too late. Incapable of recognizing a pattern which has played itself out for 75 years. Oppressed people are credible narrators of their own lived experiences. To listen to oppressed people when they are showing us every day what is happening. The premier hospital in Gaza is closed and people are dying, continue to be injured in airstrikes, but they can't go to a hospital and be treated. Palestinian doctors on the ground have been telling us the hospitals have completely collapsed because of a lack of supplies and because of direct attacks by the Israeli occupation. Why are we not listening to them?
I don't believe anything until Wolf Blitzer says it.
Hello and welcome to episode 109 of the Palestine Pod, the weekly podcast where we break down the latest headlines dealing with Palestine from all over the world and bring you stories, commentary, and interviews with the aim of supporting the Palestinian struggle for decolonization, justice, and equal rights. I'm one of your hosts, Lara E. You might know me from Instagram as @GazanGirl, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mikey B.
What's up, y'all? Mikey B on TikTok, Michael Schertzer on Instagram. And you can call me Mikey Intifada if all those TikToks didn't prepare you for tactical combat.
Before we get into today's episode, please like, comment, and subscribe if you hang out with us on YouTube. If you're listening on a podcast app, subscribe and leave a review. As always, you can find our full episodes and sources on palestinepod.com. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, reach out to us at palestinepod@gmail.com and give us a follow on Instagram @thepalestinepod. Find us also on Patreon, where you get early access to the Palestine Pod episodes, an additional podcast per week. It's called the Patreon Pod. It's a little more laid back. We talk politics, Palestine, pop culture, and get a little more personal. We're also hosting our monthly Zoom happy hours with our Patreon subscribers only. So really exciting stuff. Check us out on patreon.com/palestinepod. And for the first time ever, guys, we're going to be doing a giveaway with Knafa Queens. So if you are a fan of the pod and you are a fan of Knafa, we're going to ask you to follow both Knafa Queens and Palestine Pod on Instagram, subscribe to Palestine Pod on YouTube, and give us a comment on this week's episode on our YouTube page for this episode. We will be picking one of those comments to send some Knafa Queens Knafa to anywhere in the continental US. So looking forward to sharing their Knafa with you guys. I was going to say may the best person win, but it's not a game. So we will just be arbitrarily selecting a winner.
But yes, may the best person win anyways from our selection.
The theme of this week's episode is We Told You So. We told you so. Why do I say that? Because in the last couple of days, a number of reports and investigations have come out confirming exactly what Palestinians have been saying about their own lived experiences on the ground during this Nakba in Gaza right now. And I'd like to go through them because I think it's important, but I need people to understand that the point of all this is not that our testimonies have in this moment been confirmed by the likes of the New York Times, the Washington Post, or various investigative outlets. The point of all of this is to get people to understand that oppressed people are credible narrators of their own lived experiences, and that we need to listen to oppressed people when they are telling us what is happening to them, when they are showing us every day what is happening to them. But let's look at the investigations and the reports themselves. So the Washington Post came out with an investigation confirming what, of course, we all knew, that there was, in fact, no command and control center under El Shifa Hospital. Not at all. Not even close. There was nothing. Now, the question that I have is how many Palestinians were killed as a result of this lie that was allowed to be spread by Israel, by the United States, by every media outlet, including the Washington Post itself, which repeated this over and over and over, by the President of the United States, Joe Biden, Genocide Joe, who actually, when pressed by reporters, have you seen evidence? Do you believe that there's a command and control center? Oh, yes, 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 I believe. I can't tell you what I've seen, but I definitely believe. What are you all doing? Why is it that time and again, they take the word of the regime, which is responsible for carrying out in this moment not only apartheid, but also genocide, without applying any scrutiny to what is being said. Now, we all laughed when they showed us the calendar, when they showed us the MRI machine, when they showed us the computer, and they told us, look at all the evidence. And we'd said, this is not evidence, but it still wasn't enough. It still wasn't enough for the mainstream media to turn around and say, hey guys, this is really embarrassing and awkward, but this is not what you said there was going to be. Because remember, the Israeli occupation released this AI-generated video showing El Shifa Hospital and then showing a command center underneath with people walking around and different rooms and corridors and all this. And it was all generated. It was a fake video. It was a fake video generated by AI. It was animation, you guys. It was an animated video that they spread. They posted it on their official Twitter accounts. And they said, this is the proof. And this is why we have to siege, attack, snipe, kill, invade. This is why we have to bomb the maternity ward. This is why we have to bomb the outpatient clinic of El Shifa Hospital. This is why we have to bomb the solar panels of El Shifa Hospital. This is why we have to forcibly evacuate every single patient that was being treated in El Shifa Hospital. This is why we have to bomb the hospital itself, go inside and raid the hospital. This is why we have to kidnap the doctors at the hospital. And this is why we actually have to shut the entire hospital down. And the hospital is shut down right now. It is not operating. It is completely closed. The premier hospital in Gaza is closed. And people are dying because of the fact that it is closed. And they continue to be injured in airstrikes, but they can't go to a hospital and be treated because of this lie. It is impossible to even calculate how many people have been killed as a result of this lie. Because it's not only the people that Israel killed during the siege and the attack on the hospital. It's all the people who died as a result of not being able to be treated in that hospital. Not only in the moment during the siege and the attack and after they evacuated people and sent them to various other hospitals, which, by the way, the Israeli occupation then would continue to go on and siege as well, because the attack didn't stop at El Shifa Hospital. It began there. The sieging and the collapsing of the healthcare system in Gaza began there. And then it spread to all the other hospitals in Gaza. I just have one question. Is Israel ever going to be held accountable for this? Or is this just going to be one of the other things that we add to the list of things where we say, we told you they did it, they lied about it, then it came out that it was true that they did it, but by the time it came out, it was already too late and people's lives were taken from them. But everyone had already moved on because we don't care about the El Shifa Hospital siege and attack because that was weeks ago. Why are we incapable of recognizing a pattern which has played itself out like clockwork for 75 years? The next report comes from the New York Times. The New York Times did an investigation where they confirmed that Israel bombed safe zones. Safe zones where it told Palestinians to shelter. That's definitely true. But what took you so long, New York Times? Palestinians have been saying this since Israel first ordered Palestinians to evacuate their homes over 2 months ago. What took you so long? The first order that the Israeli occupation made for Palestinians to leave their homes was immediately followed by an airstrike on a convoy that was carrying dozens and dozens of women and children from the north to the south on a safe road. I don't know if you guys remember that airstrike, but it took place in October and they bombed literally a 16-wheeler truck. It didn't have like a closed truck bed. It was just a flat area where there was literally women and children and families sitting all along the 16-wheeler. There was probably over 100 people. The first attack they did was on that convoy that was evacuating families from the north to the south. That was in October. And then once people started to reach the places that Israel told them to go, first it was the middle, then it was Khan Yunis, then it was Rafah. Every single day of this genocide for almost 80 days now, Israel has been bombing, without exaggeration, every single part of Gaza, the north, the south, the east, and the west. Its orders for families to evacuate are completely irrelevant to the question of their safety. People have to understand this point. This is an essential point. Israel is telling Palestinian families to move further and further south. but not because that will ensure their safety, but only because that will allow Israel to accomplish its goal of ethnic cleansing, a goal which it has expressly stated time and again. We remember the Israeli intelligence document that said the whole point was to expel 2.3 million people to the Sinai. We remember after that, Netanyahu talking to his buddies saying, we got to find a plan to quote unquote thin out Gaza. They're talking about it. The whole point is ethnic cleansing. So people need to understand that when they say, oh, but well, if you had just gone here, you would have been safe. No. They're not telling us to go there to be safe. They're telling us to go there so that they can execute their ethnic cleansing, forcible displacement plan in stages. Because you can't tell everyone to go from the north to the Sinai in an afternoon. But what you can do is take 2 months and tell people go from the north to the middle. Not go from the middle to Khan Yunis. Nah, just go a little bit further. Just go from Khan Yunis to Rafah. Oh, go from Borej camp to Deir al-Balah. Go from here to here. Go from Jabalia to here. That's how it works. It works in stages. And the New York Times confirmed what Palestinians have been saying and what actually international organizations that are on the ground, the few of them that are on the ground, some of the UN workers that are on the ground, have also confirmed that there's no safe place in Gaza. We've heard this time and again. But it took the mainstream media 80 days of a genocide to catch up, to listen to Palestinians, and to actually publish a report verifying our testimony. Now, I don't thank them for doing this, because I think they're starting to realize that the historical record is going to turn against them. But this is too little too late. I still remember the grotesque headline that the New York Times ran earlier in this genocide. Explosion, Gazans say, was airstrike, hits dense neighborhood. What? You mean they bombed a refugee camp filled with refugees that they were responsible for creating 75 years ago?
Yoda working as an editor for the New York Times.
And the last report came from Forensic Architecture. It was an investigation that confirmed systematic targeting of hospitals in Gaza. Now, we already know that that's true because the WHO publishes reports on an almost daily basis telling us which hospitals are functioning in Gaza and which are not, and also explains to us as to the ones that are functioning, are they partially functioning, are they fully functioning, or are they barely functioning at all and really just functioning as a first aid station? We already have this information, you guys. Palestinian doctors on the ground have been telling us this information. They told us that the hospitals have completely collapsed because of a lack of supplies, because of a lack of fuel and electricity, and because of direct attacks by the Israeli occupation. Why are we not listening to them?
I personally don't believe anything until Wolf Blitzer says it. If Anderson Cooper is not spoon-feeding me thoughts, I don't know what to think.
You have anything to say on this particular thing, or should I go on to something else?
I feel like you're going to go off.
I should
just step out of the way.
No. I mean, look, it's just that these reports, these three reports, right, they came out within like 48 hours of one another.
Yeah.
And then the resounding elephant in the room that nobody is paying attention to, and that none of these reports in their contents even address, is not that they've proven this thing to be true based on AI or based on examining the craters that the bombs create, you know, so that now we know there's been hundreds of airstrikes in the south, even after you told people to go to the south. And by the way, they're not just any airstrikes, they're 2,000-pound bombs that should never be used in a densely populated area. That's literally the takeaways that they discovered, that not only did they bomb the areas in the south that they told people to go to, but that they used 2,000-pound bombs, which should never be used in an area where there's lots of people.
Yes, the only time it should be used is when Netanyahu is visiting Epstein's Island. Every video that the occupation uploads is them doing TikTok dances inside an exploded maternity ward. And then every single video uploaded by the resistance is them running up to a tank with an explosive in their hands and dropping it and then running away. So the contrast couldn't be starker. A lot of reports of friendly fire happening coming out of the occupation's army, occupation's ground forces. Apparently, they claim that 20% of the casualties that have been inflicted on the IOF are self-inflicted. Let's sit with that for just a second, right? Because that means that 20% of their losses, if this is accurate, like nobody, we know that they've never told the truth about anything. So
right. Except wanting to commit genocide. Like that's the one thing where they're like, actually it was us.
Yeah. They're like, hey, we're so good at killing. Actually, we even killed our own soldiers. We don't want you to take credit for that.
Did you see the video where they fired a tank shell on this like girl boss soldier?
Yes.
And then she like exploded? Like what happened to her?
She did not explode, but what happened is she's standing directly in front of a tank.
Why?
As it's shooting a high level artillery shell. And it's like,
why? Like what do they have no train? Like what?
Well, the thing is the only thing they're trained to do is comment, define genocide, right? So they're not prepared when they actually have to go out into the field to commit genocide, that when they have to define genocide themselves in the field, they have a tough time.
Right. And the thing is I can define genocide. So
yeah. And you can also steer clear of a tank as it's firing.
I mean, I would hope, right? I would hope.
It just shows that they have absolutely no training. They should not be allowed to have those weapons. They are a danger to humanity and to themselves. Saying that you are responsible for 20% of your own losses in combat is crazy. And then they also, the Israeli occupation forces, killed 3 hostages who were surrendering. So clearly unarmed. One of them was yelling for help in Hebrew, waving white flags. And they were gunned down by the Israeli occupation forces. So
all of them.
Yes, all of them.
All of them. And you know what's crazy about that story is that they published
everything?
This.
Literally everything. Because there have been. What's crazy about that is there have been literal marches and posters put up like, bring them home. And then when they are being brought home, they are shot by the occupation.
What's crazy about that is it means one of two things. Either they're killing everybody, which is consistent with what our families are telling us.
Which
is consistent. Yeah, exactly. Which is consistent with what our family's telling us. Because by the way, as time goes by, we're starting to get more and more reports of like field executions, just killing anybody that is walking, even carrying a white flag, just anybody that is walking. There was a very disturbing report about 2 pregnant women that were walking to reach a hospital, and they were both shot and sniped and killed. And then an Israeli bulldozer bulldozed their bodies. And the man who's recounting this story is standing in the middle of this area, which has clearly been bulldozed, and there's mangled, you know, cement and iron and garbage everywhere. And he points down and you can see that there's bodies that are like in this mangle of just like completely like indistinguishable, like just carnage. Al Jazeera reported it, and there's this eyewitness testimony, and he's pointing down to the bodies and he's saying those are their bodies. And by the way, they also sniped the one of the husbands that was walking with them. So we're getting more and more reports of field executions, more and more reports of men being lined up and shot in front of their families. In fact, one of those such reports was actually brought to the attention of the United Nations, and there was a letter that was issued by the UN on this account. Okay, so there was a news release by the United Nations Human Rights in the Occupied Palestinian Territory on December 20th, entitled Unlawful Killings in Gaza City. The UN has received disturbing information alleging that the Israeli occupation forces summarily killed at least 11 unarmed Palestinian men in front of their family members in the Ramal neighborhood of Gaza City, which raises alarm about the possible commission of a war crime. This comes in the wake of earlier allegations concerning the deliberate targeting and killing of civilians at the hands of Israeli forces. The Israeli authorities must immediately institute an independent, thorough, and effective investigation into these allegations. And if found to be substantiated, those responsible must be brought to justice and measures implemented to prevent any such serious violations from reoccurring. Now, here are the facts. On December 19th, 2023 between 8 and 11 p.m., the Israeli occupation forces reportedly surrounded and raided Al Hawda building, also known as Anan building, in the Ramal neighborhood in Gaza, where three related families were sheltering in addition to Anan family. According to witness accounts circulated by media sources and the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, while in control of the building and the civilians sheltering there, the IOF allegedly separated the men from the women and children and then shot and killed at least 11 of the men, mostly in their 20s and 30s, in front of their family members. The IOF then allegedly ordered the women and children into a room and either shot at them or threw a grenade into the room, reportedly seriously injuring some of them, including an infant and a child. The UN has confirmed the killings at Al Hawda building, although the details and circumstances of the killings are still under verification. IOF has not released any information on the incident. So we know that the people are dead, and we have the eyewitnesses telling us how they died. And the UN issues this report being like, well, they're definitely dead. We're still trying to figure out how they died, but these Palestinians are telling us how they were killed. Now, in the aftermath of what I just told you about how Palestinians have been telling the truth this entire time, and it always comes out like 2 or 3 months later that we were telling the truth, maybe just take our word for it this time. Remember, they did this with Razan Najjar. We said they sniped her in 2018 at the Great March of Return. They denied it. And then a New York Times investigative report, a CNN investigative report, all these investigative reports came out months later being like, oh yeah, the occupation did snipe her. They did the same thing with Shireen Abu Akleh. They do the same thing every single time. And these reports are coming out more and more, especially in the northern part of Gaza right now. Ramal is where my family is from. Ramal is where my family is from. And the occupation published a video of them literally detonating a bomb in Ramal that in a few seconds manages to wipe out dozens and dozens and dozens of buildings, like multiple streets in Ramal. They published it. They keep publishing videos of themselves committing war crimes. The occupation published another video of them showing the Shujahiyya district in northern Gaza. There's nothing left, Michael. It used to be a bustling neighborhood filled with hundreds of family houses, and the IOF posts this video and there's not a single building left. Not only is there not a single building left, there's nothing left. So what about like all the furniture that was inside? What about all the people's belongings that were inside? There's nothing left. It's literally just dirt. Why do they keep publishing videos of themselves committing war crimes?
Like, I think the way that we've internalized internet fame has made these IOF soldiers tell on themselves every single day because they're recording their activities. I remember when I first came out with the story about how I was hazed by my fraternity brothers. We were, you know, tied up, hands behind our backs, blindfolded, dark room, all of that. Like, I described it very accurately. And then there were some people online who were like, "You're lying. We're going to take you to court." And then just a couple days after, videos started surfacing, uploaded by the IOF themselves, of them doing exactly that, but way worse. Slapping, beating, burning, executing people, straight up executing people against the wall, like you are in Nazi Germany. There's a video of a guy who was kneeling, and then you can see from the blood pattern, the way he was executed was in a downward shot. And so it's like he fell forward because he was shot from behind on his knees.
There was another video, and I don't know if this is from the occupied West Bank or from Gaza, but I shared it on my Instagram. And by the way, all these videos that we're talking about, I have saved absolutely everything that I have uploaded since this genocide began in my highlights. So all of this stuff can be found there in any event. But there was another video of a Palestinian hostage who had his eyes covered and who was laying on the ground, and he was being slapped in the face by an Israeli occupation soldier who uploaded this video onto social media, again, sharing evidence of war crimes. And the soldier was making the Palestinian hostage sing in Hebrew, "Everything is good," while he was being slapped. What is the purpose of this? What is the purpose of any of this? There was another video of occupation soldiers after they had invaded a Palestinian home in northern Gaza, sitting on the couch, eating chips, smoking a shisha as if they were hanging out after work. And then they pan the camera. And then you see about a dozen or so Palestinian hostages with their eyes covered, with their hands tied on the ground. And they're watching them as if it's entertainment while they're in occupying somebody's home, a family house.
I don't know if you recall, but I told you about this on the first episode of the Palestine Pod, where I was recounting the things that the Israeli occupation soldiers had told to me, right, about what they did. A part of tying somebody up and then blindfolding them, a part of it is that you then just do normal stuff around them so that they never know when they're about to be beaten, when they're about to be moved, when they're about to be executed, right? Because it's all a part of the mental warfare of losing some of your senses, losing sight, losing the ability to move freely. So you're constantly on edge, you're constantly scared. Even the sound of somebody eating chips around you is enough to cause a full-blown panic attack because you don't know what's going on. It's a part of their strategy of breaking people down mentally.
In the meantime, what is the Israeli public opinion about all of this stuff? Well, let me tell you, the Times of Israel ran an op-ed by a guy arguing that Jewish people should not bemoan Gaza in public. And his argument was basically, will expressing our pain for Gazans make us more compassionate? Will failing to do so make us morally bereft? No and no. So the argument is, don't feel bad about it. Just keep going. In the article, he literally says, don't let them use our hearts against us. That's in the article. That's not me.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Israelis are the only one harvesting organs.
Something else happened. Al Jazeera published an article. Israeli protesters attempt to block aid trucks entering Gaza. Now, this was initially reported again by the Times of Israel, that the Israeli army quashed a protest intended to block trucks of humanitarian aid from reaching Gaza. Protesters who were stopped by police waved Israeli flags and held signs accusing the government of supporting the enemy by allowing the trucks into Gaza. The government that is starving and dehydrating the enemy and allowing a trickle of aid in, just enough so people will fight over it, but mostly everybody will still die from disease and starvation and dehydration. That army was being accused by the protesters of being too compassionate. This protest was arranged by two groups, including the Mother's March, which claims to represent the parents of Israeli soldiers fighting in Gaza.
People are often like, it's not the people, right? It's not the, gotta distinguish between the government and the people. It's like, okay, well, first of all, the government is filled with people. Literally everybody who is a part of the government is a person, presumably, who lives inside of the occupation. Furthermore, everybody except for the ultra-Orthodox serves in the occupation forces. And that's
and refuseniks, and a handful of refuseniks.
Yes. Very nice of you to mention them. There are about 40 at the moment. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's a small but mighty number. And definitely shout out to those folks. They're doing
definitely
the best that they can. That said, yeah, 9 out of 10 people in the occupation support what's happening in Gaza as far as the genocide is concerned. And
at the same time that this protest was organized, arguing the occupation of being too gentle by starving and dehydrating people and allowing trickle of aid in. At the same time, the UN World Food Program posted on about a week ago, on December 13th, that 45,000 pregnant and 68,000 breastfeeding women in Gaza don't have enough food to eat. So that means also that their babies are starving and dehydrating to death. So you're talking about over 100,000 mothers and their children are definitely starving to death. But we actually know that separate statistics confirm that 9 out of 10 people in Gaza are not eating every day.
Also, before the genocide, 97% of the water in Gaza wasn't potable. So, yeah, it's sort of like they're doing the Trail of Tears with AI, right? Like, they learned from the Holocaust. They just learned the wrong lessons. They learned the lessons of how to perpetuate a genocide. And they recognize that they don't actually want to be involved in the day-to-day of murdering people, right? It's much easier to murder people with airstrikes or to dehydrate them, to starve them, to run them around constantly until they die of dehydration and starvation.
The first step was to make everybody leave their homes. So you displaced 90% of the population, and those are the latest numbers according to UNRWA. The next step was to destroy 60% of the buildings in Gaza, and that's where we're at now. That's still ongoing. They're continuing every day to bomb Gaza, and they will be destroying more and more buildings with each and every day. The third step is to make it so unlivable that everybody is just desperate to get out. Like, you don't have to push them out. You have to just make it so unlivable that everybody's dying to get out and doing anything they can to get out, with the understanding that their homes are gone and that they're now living in a tent or sleeping on the street or displaced in some school that's getting bombed with white phosphorus or.
I want to share something about the mindset of the Zionist project that was posted by JVP. It comes from Naomi Klein's latest book called Doppelganger Politics. Listen closely to these passages. The tacit argument many Zionists were making at the time was that Jews had earned the right to an exception from the decolonial consensus, an exception born of their very recent extermination. So 1948, the entire world is moving towards decolonization. But in this moment, Zionists are saying, no. We get to do colonialism one last time. Okay. She goes on. The Zionist version of justice said to Western powers, if you could establish your empires and your settler colonial nations through ethnic cleansing, massacres, and land theft, then it is discrimination to say we cannot. You see how they weaponize the concept of discrimination in order to allow them to commit an injustice, right? She goes on. If you cleared your land of its indigenous inhabitants or did so in your colonies, then it is anti-Semitic to say we cannot. It was as if the quest for equality were being reframed not as the right to be free from discrimination, but as the right to discriminate. Colonialism framed as reparations for genocide.
That's the episode title, I think.
Now that I've just read that, I want to conclude with an op-ed I read by an Israeli in Al Jazeera. I also posted it a couple of days ago, because this gives insight into the mentality that is happening right now, the genocidal fervor. And I think it's really important for us to, like, we see the carnage. We have, you know, day in and day out, we're getting the news from Gaza. We're getting the every day is the worst day testimonies. We're getting the testimonies. Yeah. We're getting the accounts. Yeah. His name is Yoav Litvin. He's an Israeli-American doctor of psychology and neuroscience, a writer and a photographer. Okay. His op-ed is The Anatomy of Zionist Genocide. And he says, what are the motivations behind Israel's genocidal acts in Gaza, and what is the way forward? Now, he echoes a lot of what Naomi Klein says about the founding of the settler colonial project as being like this exception. No, we get to do it one last time. And this sort of framework and worldview that comes with it. But let's see what he says about this current moment. He said, following Hamas's unprecedented excursion, Israel's public relations apparatus launched a misinformation campaign aimed at inciting fear and fury and began to spread unverified atrocity propaganda. The campaign helped the government garner crucial public support for mass mobilization of reserve units, which made the consequent full-scale ground invasion of Gaza possible. After securing unconditional military, political, and diplomatic backing of its imperial sponsors in the West, most notably in Washington, and under the pretext of countering Hamas and rescuing captives, Israel then initiated what has since been accurately described as an AI-guided mass assassination campaign in Gaza. 10 weeks on, most of Gaza is now destroyed. Nearly 20,000 Palestinians are dead, with many more still under the rubble, and the world continues to watch a genocide unfold in real time. Examining these events through a behavioral neuroscientific lens could offer insights into the Zionist settler colonialist dynamic in general, and the particular motivations behind Israel's current genocidal acts in Gaza. Beyond justifying violent land theft, the conflation of Zionism in Judaism serves to delegitimize indigenous resistance by equating any criticism of Zionism or Israel's policies towards the Palestinians as an attack on Jews. Further, it hinders anti-colonial resistance by portraying a political struggle over land and resources between occupying settlers backed by imperial forces and an indigenous occupied people as a supposed ancient religious conflict between equals. This conflation encourages Zionist appropriation and exceptionalization of Jewish victimhood. Israeli Hasbara presents the Holocaust as an unparalleled genocide, granting Jews special victim status. This narrative justifies privileges, discounts, and allowances for Israel, constructed to ensure the safety of Jews at the expense of indigenous Palestinians. The liberal wing of Zionism serves to whitewash the reactionary core of the movement and conceal its true objectives, expansionism and apartheid. Misleadingly, liberal Zionists portray Zionism as an ideology aligned with democratic, progressive values and human rights, falsely projecting a genuine commitment to peace, justice, and full integration in the Middle East. Until October 7th, Israel upheld its founding aspiration, enforcing a doctrine of endless occupation while oscillating between implicit and explicit forms of genocide, the latter often described as mowing the lawn. Where's the passage I actually want to read you? Oh, here we go. Okay.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
No. I wanted to read you this passage about the mentality, but it's just buried at the bottom. And I forgot that because I read this like a week ago.
Is it buried deep, deep inside of the article in his psyche?
I don't know. I don't get... Okay, no,
it's a psychology joke.
Okay, he's confirming again what Palestinians are saying. He says that the toxic mix of fear, dehumanizing propaganda, rewards for aggression, and intense apartheid has bred a lack of empathy in Israelis towards Palestinians. Despite claiming that Gaza is a moment of self-defense, Israeli leaders openly blame Palestinian society as a whole, essentially sanctioning collective punishment of civilians. Daily, Israeli institutional leaders mock Palestinian culture and cheerlead the torture, displacement, and annihilation of Palestinians, revealing a disturbing genocidal mindset. The society is not well.
Yeah, it's sort of like if the Nazis were trying to go viral on TikTok every day. Check me out. This is me in the watchtower.
But what's interesting is what he says about the solution to all this. And this kind of goes along with what we've said before. And I think even Rabbi Shapiro said this, which is that Zionism, actually, this is from Rabbi Shapiro. He said that Zionism is a mental illness, right? And so in this op-ed, he says, for Israelis to break their addiction to aggression, they would need to go through a process of deprogramming and decolonization. This would require them to embrace the truth about the history and nature of their country, commit to sincere accountability, recognize the humanity of Palestinians, and empathize with their suffering and plight. Once the oppressive structure Zionism is disassembled, it can be effectively dismantled, paving the way for a process of rehumanization and reconciliation through the use of empathy. Liberation, reconciliation, and an end to Israel's genocidal violence can only be achieved within a steadfast and unwavering anti-Zionist framework that aligns with wider leftist, anti-racist, and anti-colonial values.
Yes, this is why they physically attack people who are against their ideology. They literally can't comprehend not viewing it as their identity. And so it feels like an attack on them, to which they respond to with physical violence, because that's literally all they know.
Now, this is interesting. James Zogby from the Arab American Institute tweeted that 7 years ago, we polled Israelis and Palestinians on the From the River to the Sea controversy. A strong plurality in both favored one state. When asked how that would look, Israelis said it meant expelling all Palestinians, and Palestinians said it meant equal rights. Let's recenter ourselves again and remind the world, because it bears repeating every time we speak about this, that Palestinians are looking for the respect of their human rights. But the respect of our human rights as a people does not infringe upon the respect of your human rights as a people. We are not seeking to do to you what you did to us. And this is something that I wrote in an article last week. There is no situation in history where an oppressed people, as part of their liberation, has sought to replace the oppressor and enact what the oppressor enacted towards them, now to the oppressor, former oppressor. Didn't happen when enslaved Africans freed themselves from slavery. They didn't take white former slave owners as slaves. Didn't happen when Black South Africans freed themselves from apartheid. They didn't try to set up an apartheid system against white South Africans. It didn't happen when Algerians freed themselves from French colonialism. They didn't try to colonize France in reverse. Like, this doesn't happen. So the notion that we would, as a people, seek to enact violence, like mass atrocities, as part of our liberation, as part of our freedom, is completely baseless. Listen to what we're saying. We want rights.
Yeah, but let's talk about why they think it is a call for genocide, right? We spoke to Miko Peled, his father, General Matty Peled, one of the key figures during 1948 and 1967. and during 1953 to a lecture at which Ben Gurion was present, the general Matty Pellid said that from the river to the sea was how much land the military was prepared to steal. It was how the borders would look in the future, ideally. And Miko said that the generals were just waiting on the words from the government to take that much land. So they view it as a call for genocide, because when they said it in 1953, it was a call for genocide. Furthermore, it's in the Likud charter, right? They always love to talk about charters. In the Likud charter, and they're talking about the expulsion of Palestinians, the replacement of Palestinians, right? And it's like, the only thing that Palestinians have ever used it for was a rallying cry for freedom, for justice.
For human rights, for human rights, like the same rights that you have. It doesn't mean that you will be expelled. It doesn't mean that we're going to throw you into the sea the way you threw us into the sea during the Nakba of 1948, literally. Netanyahu goes to the UN and he shows a map of Israel. He just wipes out Gaza, wipes out the occupied West Bank. It's all Israel for him. And he ignores the fact that there's Palestinians in all parts of that land, all throughout the land. Managed to postpone his corruption trial through this genocide. Please understand. I can never say that enough. That every day he continues this genocide is one more day he's not in court for corruption, because the country was like, oh, well, now we're in war, so let's just wait to prosecute you until you're done. So if I don't want to be prosecuted, I'm just never going to end the war until I die. Did you see the video?
The best way to stop a prosecution is a genocide, apparently.
Which is weird, because it should be like the quickest way to be prosecuted. But no, not in the world that we live in, where there's absolutely no value for Palestinian life.
That's such a great point. Genocide should not be cause for postponing a corruption trial. If anything, it should expedite a crimes against humanity genocide trial. Should it not? Should it not immediately trigger a trial? Like, if there's any validity to any law at all, then, like, how is it that you could just postpone a corruption trial with a genocide?
Dude, they reported on it in the Israeli media talking about, oh, the corruption trial has been postponed because of the war. We'll check back in a few months. And this is a huge conflict of interest. The person taking the decision on when to stop the war, quote unquote, should not be the person who is up on corruption charges and able to postpone them through continuing the war. Like, there is a direct conflict of interest here. Anyway, did you see the video of Joe Biden being asked what he thought about the fact that 20,000 Palestinians were killed in Gaza in the last 2.5 months?
I didn't see it. I did see that he walked back the claims of having seen evidence of 40 babies, and that's tough because he can barely walk forward.
Correct. A reporter asked him, any comment on the 20,000 Palestinians, mostly children, and their mothers who have been killed in the last 2 months? He
said, Saudi Arabia is a valuable ally.
No. You gotta see this video. He already, once he hears that the question is about 20,000 Palestinians who have been killed, he already checks out and starts turning away. And by the time they're done asking the question, he just like just peeps out the word, it's tragic. But he's already walking away. He's not here anymore. He hasn't said anything. He's just,
in fairness, he hasn't been here in years. The man has been checked out mentally since 2010. Okay. They were dragging his carcass around when he was the sidekick.
He couldn't even string together a sentence. 20,000 Palestinian lives were not even worth a sentence, a full sentence of commentary. And I can't tell you which is more dehumanizing and which is more disheartening, seeing the images and the videos of our children being massacred and scared and terrified and separated from their families and starving, or the Western world's reaction to it, which is that this is completely inevitable, business as usual. Just a Tuesday in capitalism. What's all the commotion about? Which is worse. And Noor Arakat said something in a talk, which was that we keep trying to come up with analogies to be like, okay, well, like 10,000 Palestinian children is like if you were in this country and it's like this many children. Like we keep doing this like analogy thing. Oh, well, like Gaza is the size of this. So let me explain to you. Like it's like if you put it on top of New York, it's like from Staten Island to like this and the Bronx and whatever. And she's like, but the problem is that it's not working because just the fact that we're telling you that we've buried 10,000 children in 2 months should be enough to trigger the sympathy without us having to analogize it to something that you understand.
Yeah, murder math is what I call it. You shouldn't have to be like a population the size of Tempe, Arizona. It's like, no, there's a genocide happening. Shut the fuck up.
And I see these people are engaging in this logic all over the internet, like in good faith. But it's not useful and it contributes to our dehumanization. And in fact, what it actually illustrates is that us narrating our genocide is not enough. And that's exactly the frustration that Palestinian journalists on the ground have felt. That's why they all wrote their goodbye letters like, what, 2 weeks ago now? And they said, why do we keep uploading this shit for you guys? This hasn't stopped. You haven't stopped this. So are you just spectators now? Is this entertainment? Like, what is this? Why are we continuing to do this? Mohammed Al-Hilo told me the same thing on a live. He said, I don't know why I even keep uploading shit. And he said, and in fact, I'm not even uploading that much stuff. He said, I take a lot of pictures, but I don't even post most of them because I know it won't make a difference. And I'm starting to hear that as well.
Yeah, people are like, oh, they're starving to death over there. But can you relate it to Staten Island for me?
But like, I wish that even if we did that, that then you would understand. The thing is that because you don't care in the first place, it doesn't matter how many analogies we bring you, you still won't care. And at the end of the day, that goes back to the world, the Western world, not seeing us as human beings, not seeing our children as children, not seeing our families as worthy of life. The most hopeless part about this for me right now is that it's December 24th. Palestinians in Palestine, in Bethlehem, in the birthplace of Jesus, peace be upon him, have canceled Christmas this year. There is no Christmas this year. But you know what? The world will still go on today and tomorrow to celebrate Christmas because I don't think they think about Jesus anyway when they celebrate Christmas. It's a capitalist holiday for them. It's not like they're sitting there recounting stories of Jesus's life. Nobody cares. They don't give a shit. Most of them are not. So they'll still celebrate their corporate holiday. Meanwhile, in Palestine, Christmas is canceled because there's a genocide and there's no end in sight to the genocide. It's not like it's showing signs of slowing down. We're on day 80. How much longer is this going to go on? The sadistic psychopaths that are in control of this whole thing, what is your plan here?
That's been another episode of the Palestine Pod. Thank you all so much for listening. Check out our full episodes and sources, www.palestinepod.com. Follow us on Instagram at ThePalestinePod. Send us an email at palestinepod@gmail.com. And look for us on Patreon, www.patreon.com/palestinepod. That's been another episode of The Palestine Pod. Thank you all so much for listening. Have as good a day as you can. Okie doke. Bye.